Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Ford v Free Play, when free doesn't mean free. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris. How are you?
After years of doing the podcast, you're actually asking me how I am.
Yeah, you know, I thought I'd mix it up a bit after last week's chat of not deviating from the format. Thought I might deviate from the format. I mean, that was it. I'm not doing it again. But how are you?
Normally, you just say hello.
Yeah.
Not interested in how I am, normally.
I'm not. But how are you?
This week, you're asking me how I am. I am fine, I would say.
Good. No, that's enough. As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when the BBC did a big old U-turn on Rule Britannia.
Specifically in relation to the last night of the proms.
Yes.
Which we talked about on last week's set list.
We did.
The fact that there was a debate over whether or not Rule Britannia and Land of Hope and Glory would be performed at this year's proms. Two sides to this, wasn't there? There was debate number one, which is it still appropriate that we're singing these empire-glorifying colonial anthems in the 21st century? But then separate to that, there was a separate debate of, should we be singing anything at all, given the whole COVID stuff and the fact that most people agree that when people sing, they spit a lot.
Yes.
So the BBC had said they were only going to do instrumental versions of Rule Britannia and Land of Hope and Glory this year, but that wasn't because of the controversies around the lyrics. It was because they didn't want people spitting as they sang the lyrics, but people still got offended that it was political correctness gone mad, even though it wasn't, and possibly it should have been. And now all of that's irrelevant because they are going to have spitty singers spitting out the lyrics, but fewer singers is the compromise.
Yes, a select group of BBC singers is what they said they were going to have. So not the full choir that you would normally have singing them. I don't know how many singers. It may be two. It could be just two. And then it will sound bad and the BBC can say, see, we told you, it's not worth doing. But I don't think the BBC would do that. I'm sure it'll be wonderful.
And of course, no audience. We knew that. No audiences for any of the proms concerts this year, because obviously normally at the last night of the proms, it's not just the official singers who are singing, particularly those last few songs in the finale. The audience would sing along too, but there isn't an audience to sing. So it will just be some lonely voices echoing around the Royal Albert Hall, singing the lyrics to Rule Britannia. That was one of the updates that occurred this week. Another thing that happened this week, which we're not here to talk about, because we're not here to talk about that, in case you wondered, because we talked about it last week.
Yeah.
It would be stupid to talk about it again, wouldn't it? The other thing that we're not here to talk about this week, but I thought I would mention, is we've just put another series of CMU webinars on sale. Little plug. We haven't done many plugs on the old podcast in recent months.
We haven't had very much to plug.
We used to have a whole section. Well, we've had lots to plug. It's just that the only time you pay attention to anything that CMU's doing is when I plug it on the podcast. And by failing to plug anything on the podcast, you've assumed nothing is happening in the world of CMU beyond you writing a few news stories each day and then waffling on a podcast once a week. Lots of other things are happening, including the CMU webinars. They are back. We're doing them weekly. You may remember at the start of lockdown, we were doing 3 a week. That was a little bit much. Actually, I think for the people tuning in, that was quite good. It was quite a lot for me, though. We're now doing them weekly. So we've got weekly webinars kicking off later this month. There are 9 of them already in the schedule, including the last 3 are sort of retrospectives, because by that point it will be November, looking back at key developments of the year. And then in the run-up to that, we've got a session on performer rights, we've got a session on playlists, we've got a session on emerging markets, we've got a session on direct-to-fan, fan-base building, brand partnerships. All of these are coming up. They're 1-hour webinars, so you tune in. We talk a little bit about a big news story at the moment, then you get like a 40-minute presentation from me, and then we do live Q&A. Lots of questions usually come in. And yeah, you can book into those, either individual sessions, or it's cheaper if you book into 4, or you can book into all 9 for a mere £150. That's including booking fee and VAT. So I'm sure Andy will put in the show notes to accompany the decision of Setlist all the links that you need for all the information on our webinars and how to book your places. But, as I did say, we're not here to talk about that this week.
No, on this edition of Setlist, we are later on going to be discussing moves to crack down on illegal raves during the pandemic. But first, the Ford Motor Company has had a little bit of a moan via the medium of the courts about a lawsuit brought against it accusing it of copyright infringement. It says that it cannot have possibly infringed the copyright of a company called Free Play Music, because by calling itself Free Play Music, it made it sound like its music was free to play, and that's not on.
Yes, so this is Ford, the car company, responding to a lawsuit that was filed earlier this year by this company called Free Play. They are a production music library, so most of the people listening to this podcast will know what production music is, but maybe I shall just quickly give you a definition just in case. So production music is music that has been specifically written with video in mind. So the people who write this music, they're not writing it and recording it to ever release it or put it on Spotify. It's being written because they think at some point it might work well in a video on any different topic. And that's what production music is all about. But I suppose the key point is that it's not written with a specific video in mind. It's not an original commission where someone says, here's my video, write some music. It's musicians imagining what videos could be made in the future and then pre-preparing a whole load of music. And then we have these things called production music libraries that have thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces of music of this kind. And generally, the selling point of production music is if you want to put music into your videos or into your adverts or your movies or whatever, if you use production music from a music library, it's a lot easier to license, it's cheaper to license, and also generally production music companies have nice databases of their music, so it's easier to find the right kind of music for your video. So that's production music. Free Play Music is a production music company. It licenses out its production music to various different clients. Although, like a number of other sort of production companies that have sort of become big news in the last 10 years, they've always really pushed forward the music that they can provide to people putting videos on YouTube, and in particular to user-generated content in the true sense of the word. So people making videos in their bedroom, cat on a skateboard, wedding video, somebody falling over in a funny way, you know, the classic user-generated content on YouTube. You want some music to soundtrack it, and Free Play very much pitched themselves, as I say, to a number of other production music companies. That's what we're here for. We have a whole section of our website specifically set up for user-generated content, and we provide our music for user-generated content in a super, super cheap fashion, because that's what you want. Actually, Free Play go one better than that. Hence Free Play, that for user-generated content, videos going up on YouTube, you can actually use the music for free. And then what this company does is, rather than charging you to use the music, they then grab some money from YouTube itself by being part of the Content ID system. So that's what production music is. That's what Free Play is. And as I said, earlier this year, they sued the Ford Motor Company, basically saying to Ford, you used our music in your videos. You didn't get a license, you didn't pay us any money, and while we may be called Free Play, it's clear to everybody that that only counts to user-generated content on YouTube. It does not count when brands are making promotional videos as part of a marketing campaign, was basically what the lawsuit said earlier this year.
Yeah, so Free Play Music sued Ford in April this year, saying that it had used tracks from its library in promotional videos online without securing the appropriate licenses. It said in its quite forthright lawsuit that its action was for willful copyright infringement by a multi-billion dollar company too cheap to secure licensing before commercially using registered works owned by another company. As a worldwide company, it went on, that is in the business of commercially advertising its automobile products via broadcast on the internet on a global scale, the defendant knows it must obtain a license to use others' intellectual property. Yet, it willfully and consciously did not do so here on a breathtaking scale.
Yeah, so as you said, this company, Free Play, quite forthright, I think was the word you used, in their lawsuit, which they filed back in April of this year. They also explained how they had discovered the videos sitting on the internet that had been put out by Ford promoting products using their music. They'd been working with an audio ID company called TuneSat, and it was TuneSat's system that had spotted that music from their catalogue was in these videos. Although they did say in their lawsuit that although the audio ID system had spotted some of those videos, it's possible that there are many more that they are yet to discover. In fact, they went as far as saying that the specific videos they were listing in their lawsuit could be the tip of the iceberg, they said. It then went on that there are likely many other unauthorized uses that have not yet been discovered. For Freeplay to be able to find every use of its works on the internet would be impossible. It is nothing short of a miracle that Freeplay has discovered those involved herein. Finding these infringements is akin to finding a needle in a haystack. The defendant apparently counted on the difficulty of being caught, so sort of accusing Ford of not only infringing copyright, but of sort of being devious and exploiting the challenges that copyright owners have in terms of finding their music on the internet. They were exploiting that in order to engage in this massive, willful copyright infringement. The key word there being willful, because that has implications under American copyright law. Obviously, this is a lawsuit in the US courts, because if you can prove that copyright infringement was willful, under US law, you can sue for maximum statutory damages, and that's $150,000 per infringement. And because Ford had used a number of tracks from the Freeplay catalogues in various videos, by suing for $150,000 for each one of those, well, they managed to get it up to $8 million in damages being owed. It was another mega bucks copyright lawsuit in the American courts.
Yeah, they talked about using fragments of tracks, so it was lots of little bits of tracks, not that they'd made 54 videos with that many songs in. It was that, lots of little bits of tracks had been used here and there, scattered throughout videos, and that was how they got up to, $8 million in damages, which is quite a lot. And as a result, Ford is quite keen not to have to pay that out. And so in its formal response to the lawsuit last week, it was similarly forthright. It presented two main defences. First, that the videos that allegedly featured uncleared music from Freeplay's library were produced by third-party affiliates in other countries. They were specifically targeted at consumers in those countries, and therefore, Ford argues, there is no case to answer under American copyright law. So that's number one. Number two is more fun, because in that one, it's where Ford starts niggling, and we like a bit of niggling. Ford says that Freeplay has tricked people into thinking that they can use its music for free, and then when they do so, suing them, because if you call yourself Freeplay Music, everyone's obviously going to think that your music's free to play. Why would anyone think otherwise? And obviously Freeplay had already said, well, obviously for user-generated content, we're offering it for free. But if you're a big multi-billion dollar corporation, you don't get to use it for free. And our website clearly says that. Although Ford argues that when these videos were made, the website did not clearly say that at all.
Yes, and that's the key argument, really, in the counterclaim that Ford filed with the court last week. I mean, as you say, there was some jurisdiction stuff in there as well. But really, they're focusing on this idea that this company, Freeplay, by being called Freeplay, they also have a strap line about how there's thousands of songs available for free for using on YouTube, which is on their homepage. And actually, if you do a Google search for free music, Freeplay come up quite high in the search list, and it has that strap line there in Google search. And that's what most of the counterclaim was about. But crucially, that point, which is, okay, if you go to the Freeplay website today, although it's called Freeplay and it bigs up the thousands of free songs on the homepage, which actually Ford are even taking issue with that. But it is true that if you go to the Freeplay website today, above the strapline telling you about all the free songs that you can use on YouTube, there is a big button, well, a pretty big button, that says pricing. And when you click on the pricing button, you then get a list of all the different ways you might want to use the music. So it talks about businesses using the music, TV programs using the music, schools and colleges using the music, individual users on YouTube using the music, and then it tells you the prices. And actually, most of them, there is a price point, $50, $200, or whatever. And then there's a handful where it's $0, the free bit of Freeplay. So although actually, as I say, Ford reckon that Freeplay is still being deliberately confusing in order to catch people out. But crucially, as you said, a big chunk of the legal filing last week was saying, even if, which Ford isn't, but even if you were to say, okay, maybe, despite the slightly confusing name and strapline, today the website sort of makes sense. Most of the videos that are in dispute in this lawsuit were made prior to 2018. And apparently, according to Ford, Freeplay quite radically overhauled their website in 2018. And prior to 2018, It was much less clear what was going on, says Ford. And apparently they did another change to the website in 2013. So the big chunk of the legal filing last week talked about what the FreePlay website was like from 2010 to 2013, then from 2013 to 2018. And then I think since 2018, it's pretty much as we would see it today. And their key point is that until 2018, according to Ford, it was only really in the terms and conditions on the website that it explained that the free use of the music in this library was only an option for individual users on YouTube. And you had to go digging into the terms and conditions to see that it said, actually, if you're using our music for this, the free license doesn't apply. You need to get a paid-for license from us. All of that was in the T's and C's. And the other key thing that they say in their legal filing is that you could download music from the FreePlay website at the click of a button, and at no point as you went through that process, they allege, did it even tell you there was terms and conditions, let alone make you tick a box to say that you were approving the terms and conditions. So I guess there are two sides to what Ford are saying. They are arguing that still today the free play model is confusing, and they would say deliberately confusing to try and trip people up. But crucially, they are saying prior to 2018, when most of the disputed videos were made, it was even more confusing. So therefore, the fact that these third party affiliates of Ford used this music mistakenly wasn't their fault. And as you alluded to, they're even going one step further than all of that in basically saying not only is this incompetence on the part of FreePlay because they don't explain what they're doing, certainly prior to 2018 they didn't explain what they were doing, there's even a suggestion that that was deliberate so that people would use the music in scenarios where they're not meant to use the music, and then they can threaten legal action and earn in legal settlements way more than they would otherwise get by actually charging a license fee, is the other key allegation in Ford's counterclaim.
So that counterclaim says that between 2010 and 2013, a user could simply download music directly from FreePlay's website without agreeing to any license. In the course of selecting and downloading songs, the user was never asked for payment or an agreement to pay in the future. Indeed, no point in that process was a user required to read, much less agree to, any terms of use or given warning that FreePlay might demand a $150,000 payment in the future for the user's purported willful copyright infringement. And then, as you said, while there were some changes made to the site in 2013, Ford goes on, FreePlay's deception of users continued. Upon information and belief, users lured by FreePlay's representations of free music for their YouTube videos continued to be able to download FreePlay's songs without ever being prompted or required to read FreePlay's terms of use or manifest any assent or agreement to the provisions therein. But only in the fine print of these so-called terms of use did FreePlay purport to notify users that its music was free only for certain uses. And while since 2018 users downloading music from the FreePlay site have been obliged to accept the company's terms of service, Ford says, nonetheless, FreePlay continues its deceptive practices with its unqualified solicitation that its website offers over 50,000 songs free for YouTube and more. With that in mind, Ford not only rejects FreePlay's copyright infringement claims, but also accuses the music firm of false advertising. The natural and proximate and indeed deliberate consequence of FreePlay's misconduct has been the very copyright infringements by which FreePlay purport to have been injured, Ford goes on. In reality, FreePlay seeks to earn a windfall from these infringements through exorbitant settlement and litigation demands.
Yeah, so as we say, pretty forthright too, Ford were in their response last week. Elsewhere in their counterclaim, they talk about various rules that exist in different American states about the use of the word free and how companies need to be careful not to be misleading in their use of the word free. The allegation being that FreePlay, both in its name but also its strapline and the way it communicates, has been violating those rules. And I guess summarizing its key allegation elsewhere in the legal filing, Ford said, FreePlay's victims learn that its promise of free songs for YouTube was anything but only when Free Play consummates its bait-and-switch scheme with an unexpected demand for payment, often for $150,000 in statutory damages for each downloaded song, based on the outrageous notion that the user's unwitting copyright infringement, they put that in quotes, was willful. Because obviously, as I said, it needs to be willful in order to claim that $150,000 in damages. And basically what they're saying is that Free Play Music has threatened legal action against lots of different people who have mistakenly used their music, which is all part of this, I guess, more serious allegation, which is not only is the Free Play experience, certainly pre-2018, Ford would argue, confusing, it's deliberately confusing as part of this, and I quote, bait and switch scheme. So actually what started out as a pretty run-of-the-mill production music licensing squabble is actually turning into quite an interesting and entertaining lawsuit.
Yeah, and if any of Ford's claims are actually true about Free Play, then, I mean, that makes it a very interesting case. It makes it interesting not only about Free Play, but about the, you know, this entire business that's built up around providing music for YouTubers to use in their videos and how those companies present themselves. But I suppose it's also worth remembering that when you see the words free music or free anything on the internet, you should probably be a little bit wary about whether it is really free or not. And particularly if you are a very wealthy company who is worth suing.
Yeah, it's always the rule, isn't it, when it comes to copyright matters. Obviously, music makers all over the world are accessing stuff online, lots of people like downloading stems and beats and stuff like that. YouTubers are accessing music, and lots of these websites are, they're either free or they're super cheap. And I guess when you're a grassroots creator, often you just, you know, the minute you see free, royalty free, whatever, you think, oh, that's good, I'll grab that, I'll use that. You probably should be reading the T's and C's. What can you do and what can't you do with the music you're downloading under the license of the website that is providing it? But the general rule with all things copyright is, the minute you are worth suing, because there's no point suing poor people. You don't sue poor people. What's the point? They haven't got any money. But the minute you've got either an individual or particularly a company that has big pockets, then you need to be super, super careful. Because if it turns out that you have used music in a way that you weren't meant to, then you are much, 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 much more likely to be sued. And obviously, generally, you'll be sued in the American courts because the damages can go so much higher with copyright cases in the US. So yeah, we will be watching this case as it develops.
And finally, over the last week or so, UK police have been having a go at cracking down on the illegal raves that have been popping up with increased frequency over the summer as nightclubs have remained closed due to the ongoing pandemic. There was a particular crackdown over the recent bank holiday weekend due to, well, it being the bank holiday weekend and lots of parties expected to crop up as people had their long weekend. And in part, the police were using new powers to issue fixed penalty notices of £10,000 against people who have organised any such events.
Yeah, so one of the interesting side stories, I guess, to the whole COVID-19 pandemic has been the increased number of these unlicensed sort of club-style events, what we always refer to as illegal raves, although I think the term rave, you have a very specific image of what that is like. And I think there's a much more diverse, disparate range of unlicensed events have been happening. But obviously, unlicensed events, unlicensed club nights, house parties that get a bit out of control, I mean, they happen all the time. But they've been happening with increased frequency, it seems, in recent months, simply because, as you say, the clubbing sector is in shutdown because of COVID-19. So there are lots of people who would otherwise be going out to a club on an evening. That isn't an option anymore. So instead, they are attracted to these unlicensed events, wherever they may be happening. So because of COVID-19, there is much more appetite for these unlicensed illegal events. But I suppose if we put our responsible hats on for a moment, the weird thing is, because of COVID-19, the fact these events are being staged is more an issue. Because we have to assume that the organiser of the average illegal music event, illegal rave, whatever we're calling them, isn't putting the 2 metre stickers on the floor to make sure that people are standing apart from each other. They're not instigating one-way systems so you don't get any bottlenecks of people. They're not checking people's temperatures on the way in. They're not getting everyone's names and phone numbers as they come in. So I guess, you know, They will be breaking a load of licensing laws anyway by putting on these events without permission, but it's worse in the context of COVID because they're not obeying any of the social distancing rules either, because if they were obeying the social distancing rules, they wouldn't be operating.
Yeah, so there's been increased coverage of this in recent weeks as, I guess, more and more of these parties have taken place, and people get annoyed about these parties when there isn't a pandemic going on. So obviously now there's a double reason to be annoyed by it if you are living somewhere nearby one of these parties. So it's become a bit of a political talking point, and that's what has led to these £10,000 fines for organising an illegal event. I mean, it's not necessarily just a music event. This has been like illegal anti-mask protests and things like that have been a part of this. Any sort of large gathering which does not have approval to be there, the organisers are potentially facing these big fines. And that's aiming to be a deterrent to stop these things happening in future. But, well, it's debatable whether or not that is a deterrent at all.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the kind of event. For some events, you know, a 10 grand fine would be a deterrent. A certain scale of event, because, you know, you don't have to have that many people gathering for you to be breaking the COVID rules. So, you know, for certain events, certain scales of events, the thought of there being a 10 grand fine may be enough to say, do you know what, we're not going to do this, particularly once a number of people have been fined. So it feels like it's a real thing rather than just something that some politicians dreamt up. But depends on the event, because I think for some of these events, particularly the kind of events we would usually associate with the term illegal rave, I mean, they can be pretty big events with quite a lot of money changing hands. And I know some people who sort of work in the clubbing sector and the live sector were basically saying when they announced these new fines, well, for a lot of these events, particularly the bigger events, because they're charging people to come in and quite a lot of money is being collected over the evening, you could just budget a 10 grand contingency. You could just put in the budget, oh, we'll probably be fined £10,000. We'll put that in the budget. We'll make sure that we still make a profit despite that 10 grand fine. In fact, now that we've got an extra 10 grand cost, we need to get more people to come. We need to get more money coming through to cover that 10 grand. So now there's an incentive to actually make these events that shouldn't be happening anyway because there's too many people gathering even bigger, so more people are gathering. So, yeah, some people, I think, would argue not actually as big a deterrent than government ministers were pretending when they first announced this. One thing, though, I suppose, is what if you've got like four or five people organising an event and you find them each individually? It could actually become a bigger deterrent quite quickly where you have multiple people involved in organising an event if you're willing to find them all. So I guess there is a little bit of room for manoeuvre there. But I guess the reason why this was a big news story over that August bank holiday weekend is A, that 10 grand fine had only recently actually gone live a few days before all of this was happening. And of course, that August bank holiday here in the UK is traditionally a weekend where there are a lot of events happening. A lot of people go to festivals or clubbing things. Obviously, we have Carnival here in London, Notting Hill Carnival, would normally be taking place over that weekend. So it is a big party weekend. I guess it's the end of the summer holidays, the end of the school holidays, but most people are back from actually being away on holiday. I mean, obviously this year, most people didn't go on holiday, but in normal times, people are back from their holidays and it is a big party weekend. So because a lot of those events that would normally be taking place over that bank holiday weekend were not allowed to go ahead this year because of the COVID restrictions that are still in place, it was expected that there will be a lot more of these illegal gatherings happening. Plus, this 10 grand fine was now properly in force. So I guess it was a test. And what we were told by various police forces around the UK was that they had raided a bunch of events and that they had either already fined some people or they were planning on fining some people. So I guess that will be the test, won't it? Do they find multiple people associated with one event? If so, does that make it a bigger deterrent? And does the fact that people have actually been fined and we have the names of people who have been fined, does that make it feel more real that may put other people off doing these legal gatherings? I think it's too soon to say, but it was interesting to get some stats from various police forces on what they have been doing over that bank holiday weekend to try and crack down on these illegal raves and to use these new powers that they've been given by the government.
Yeah, it remains to be seen quite what impact these fines have. A lot of people in the clubbing sector think that they are a bit of a political token gesture and won't really actually have that much effect. And what government should be doing is working to get legitimate nightclubs up and running again so that there are legitimate events for people to go to, because obviously the reason that these events are happening is because people still want to go out and dance to music. And if that's not available anywhere legally, they're going to do it in some other way, whether it be a house party or a larger scale event. The head of the Nighttime Industry Association, Michael Kill, commented on this ahead of the bank holiday weekend, saying, "Small house parties and raves have been bubbling under the surface of society for many years now, but lockdown has intensified this, with young people searching for alternatives to late night venues as they struggle to cope with continuing restrictions on their lives due to the pandemic. Given the imminent reintroduction of student communities to university cities and restrictions on the reopening of nightclubs and venues, we are concerned that the freshers period will result in an eruption of illegal house parties and gatherings. This will create challenging times for police forces up and down the country." He goes on, "As the nighttime economy and event sector is unable to reopen to provide safe spaces for young people to express themselves, DIY alternatives are being organised, which are unregulated and may compromise young people's safety. Previous illegal events have resulted in several serious incidents, but have continued to grow in popularity over the last few months. Thousands of businesses remain closed and struggle to survive and protect the livelihoods of their staff while unsafe illegal events continue. The government must consider safe options to allow the nighttime economy and event sector to reopen to help combat the rise in illegal parties and raves across the country."
So those are the nighttime industry, the clubbing sector's demands of government. Remains to be seen if the government listened to them at all. Of course, we should add, I guess, whenever we do a COVID story on Setlist, the next day the government makes some announcement that usually makes our story redundant. So by the time you hear this, maybe the government will have said, yeah, clubs can reopen, why not? But assuming that hasn't happened, then yeah, the Nighttime Industry Association and others in that sector will be pushing to find some way to get legit clubbing style events up and running again as soon as we can. A, because they need to, because otherwise they're all going to go out of business. But B, there is this added incentive of, if we can't sort this out, these illegal gatherings are only going to increase in number. We don't think the 10 grand fines are actually going to stop sort of certainly the more organised money-making end of all of this. And that's a problem, because not only are these events not following COVID rules, they're probably not following other licensing rules as well. And that potentially puts people at risk. So we await to see whether or not the government responds to that in a positive way. Maybe they already have. I suspect they probably haven't.
But that's it for this episode of Setlist. Do remember to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Rate and review the show on all the rating and reviewing places. And if you have any questions or comments about anything we've discussed in this episode of Setlist, email us at setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed this week, you can go into the show notes in your podcast player or at setlistpodcast.com and you'll find it all there. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Setlist is an Unlimited production.